So, those sitting all the way over there, can you see the screen? No. So if you want just to move back or move over here, which is fine. Yes. Yeah, of course I can. So that you have a good view. Just move a little bit further back there so you can just see. So that means the machine up there can see. So, just like this morning, is there anybody not here? Ah, you see it worked again. Susan just came in. Very good. Wow. Okay, so you're comfortable? Because this is an anthology taken from the suttas, from the word of the Buddha, I usually begin by doing the Namo Tassa. That's just a tradition. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sammasambuddhassa. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sammasambuddhassa. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sammasambuddhassa. Buddhang Dhammang Sanghang Namasami. So, the Sutta class. So, even some years ago, you noticed that some of the translations of the word of the Buddha were very old, and words changed their meaning, and also we're having a much better understanding of what these words mean. And also that when I first read these suttas, first in English and then in Pali, you realize there was so much repetition. So much that you could hardly understand what the meaning was. And also some of the words were synonyms. They weren't all that helpful to our modern world. For example, later on, you will see that when the Buddha described this body like a sack with many kinds of rice, red rice, hill rice, whatever rice, and when I started teaching that in places like UK, they said, we don't eat rice in UK. So I said, many types of potatoes. So what it was doing, it was keeping the meaning of the simile, but just changing its expression to meet modern people. And so you'll find some of the similes a little bit modernized, but still keeping the meaning of that simile. A lot of repetition taken away, and just some new understandings of some of the words. And it seems to make it much more alive and much easier. But most of it, you know, is as you would remember it. So, as an anthology, this was based on the work of Venamunyana Taloka over 100 years ago, who wanted to get some of the teachings of the Buddha, the core teachings, and put them around the framework of four noble truths and eightfold path, and around that framework, four noble truths, eightfold path, then it gets a sutta from here, a teaching from many from there, many different places to reinforce what you might call the basic teachings in the suttas. So that's what we're presenting here. Four noble truths, eightfold path. So as I'm doing this, every now and again I will pause, and if there's anyone got any questions about any of the meanings which I've explained here. So it's okay to put your hand up and to interrupt in case there's something you haven't understood. Okay, so we start off the four noble truths. And the Buddha, have you got that? No, yeah, okay. The four noble truths. And you can see to the left of the script there, DN16, that gives an indication where it is coming from. That's the Digha Nikaya, the long discourses, and that's sutta number 16. The Buddha addressed the community thus. It is through not fully understanding and penetrating the four noble truths that I, as well as you, have experienced the cycle of rebirth and death for a very long time. Because of not fully understanding the noble truth of suffering, we have experienced the cycle of rebirth and death. By not fully understanding the noble truth of the origin of suffering, the noble truth of the cessation of suffering, the noble truth of the path leading to the cessation of suffering, that we have for a long time experienced the cycle of rebirth and death. And so long as my penetration and insight into these four noble truths as they really are was not thoroughly complete in their three phases and 12 aspects, then I did not claim to have awakened to the unsurpassed perfect enlightenment in this world. But when my penetration and insight into these four noble truths as they really are was thoroughly complete in their three phases and 12 aspects, then did I claim to have awakened to the unsurpassed perfect enlightenment in this world. And so, to make it a bit, little bit modernized, but obvious, so the three phases, 12 aspects, 1A, 1B, 1C, 2A, 2B, 2C, 3A, 3B, 3C, and 4A, 4B, 4C, is just what we do these days. But you don't find that in the original text. But it's just, you know, reordering it to make it, keeping the meaning, but making it easier to understand. So you can see here the four noble truths, the three aspects, 3 times 4 is 12. This is the noble truth of suffering. Suffering is to be fully understood. And suffering has been fully understood. So you got the statement, what you're supposed to do with it, and again, when the task is complete, you consider suffering has been fully understood. This is the noble truth of the origin of suffering, the wanting which causes rebirth. And wanting, the origin of suffering, is to be abandoned. It's called let go. For those of you who want a copy of this, you can get a copy from either Dell or that little stick over there. You don't want it? Yeah, the little stick over there. You can borrow that and take a copy for yourself. Instead, it means you don't have to go and photograph it. And, you know, if you're going to translate it afterwards, you can get it on a stick. If you've got a little machine or something, so you can read it and then translate it into Bahasa afterwards. Makes it easier for you. And you see straight away, there's a translation there. Instead of calling it craving, which is the English word which most people use, the craving is a little bit too harsh, too extreme form of wanting, but it's all forms of wanting. It leads to suffering and leads to rebirth. And if you can't see very clearly there, please, you're allowed to move around the hall if you have to shade your eyes, so it's nice and comfortable for you. And the second double truth again, understanding what is that truth. It's the wanting causes to rebirth. Once you understand that, then to abandon wanting. And then wanting has been abandoned. Let go. So the first one is to be fully understood, really penetrated with wisdom, and then wanting, let go. And the 3A, 3B, 3C. This is the noble truth of the cessation of that suffering, the extinguishing of the wanting. And the end of wanting is to be realized. And the end of wanting, the cessation of suffering, has been realized. And the fourth, this is the noble truth of the way, the how-to. The way leading to cessation of suffering, which is the Noble Eightfold Path. The Noble Eightfold Path is to be developed. And the Noble Eightfold Path, the way to the cessation of suffering, has been developed. Then, in regard to these things unheard before in this generation, there arose in me vision, knowledge, wisdom, true knowledge, and light. I consider the Dharma that has been awakened to is profound. Hard to see. Now, it looks pretty easy. You put it 1A, 1B, 1C, 2A, 2B, 2C, 3A, 3B, 3C, 4A, 4B, 4C. But it's a very powerful. It's very deep. It's awakened to is profound, hard to see, hard to understand, peaceful and sublime, unattainable by mere reasoning. Doesn't mean it goes against reason, but you need much more than logic and reason. And subtle to be experienced by the wise. But this generation delights in attachment to a self, takes delight in attachment to a self, and rejoices in attachment to a self. It is hard for such a generation to see this truth, namely the empty process of cause and effect, dependent cessation, and origination. Now, when it says delights in attachment to a self, sometimes we talk about attachment, and we're not supposed to be attached, and attachment is not a good thing. But sometimes attachment is a good thing. For example, when you're on the back of a motorbike going through Jakarta traffic, it's a very good idea to be attached. Do you agree with me from Indonesia? Yeah, I don't let go yet. But it is... And also, where does the attachment come from? Like, attachment is like a string, which, you know, it's ties, but there's something on one end of the string and something on the other. We always look at the objects of attachment. You know, I'm attached to my cup of tea. I'm attached to my little tablet. I'm attached to my robe or whatever. But we always look at the object, rather than the I am attached to this. And it's wonderful when that sense of attachment, it's not what you attach to, the thing doing the attachment, when that is seen. One, I was going to mention this morning, when I told that story about, you know, somebody taking somebody else's shoes when you leave here, would you be upset at that? It's only a pair of shoes. What's the big problem? The problem is because it's my shoes. But it was actually quite cute in a way, that when I went to see my mother in a nursing home in UK when she had dementia, she was in the dementia ward for 2 or 3 years before she passed away, and that as soon as I went in to visit her, accompanied by my brother, and my brother saw my mother and said, "That's not the dress which she's wearing, it's somebody else's dress she's wearing." Because my brother would make sure that, you know, my mum was well clothed and would get all the dresses and anything she needed. And it was a waste of time me trying to do that from Australia, and I'd just get her a brown robe if I had the choice, but I couldn't do that. So, and then my brother sort of said, "Oh, yes. This is always happening," because in the dementia ward, people couldn't remember whose dress was whose or whose shoes belonged to who. So they go into each other's room, they saw a dress they liked, or shoes, they just wear it. And so my mum wore other people's dresses and other people wore her dresses, and everyone was very happy about that. It meant you didn't need to have so much clothes in your wardrobe. With about, well, maybe about 50 or 60 people in the dementia ward, she had 50, 60 more dresses than she would normally have to choose. Wouldn't that be a wonderful way of living, when we shared without ownership? So that's one of the things we're looking at, who's actually doing the owning. That's why I put down here that we rejoice in attachment to ourself, a thing which does the owning. It is hard for such a generation to see this truth, namely the empty process of cause and effect, dependent cessation and origination. Furthermore, it is hard to embrace this truth, namely the stilling and disappearance of the will. This is the translation of the word sankhara. And if anyone wants to argue with me, there's a whole heap of evidence. Sankharas, mental formations, does that really make any sense, mental formations? What it really means is that it's volitional tendencies, they sometimes call it. In other words, the will, that thing which you identify with and you regard as that will, where does it come from and where does it go? And this is what we mean by the word sankhara. It's caused, conditioned, not from you or from some other being. It's this empty process of cause and effect, which is very important to understand. This is not easy stuff. It's very profound, which is why the Buddha was saying here, it is hard to embrace this truth, namely the stilling and disappearance of that will. The relinquishing of everything that has ever been acquired. And I don't mean your money. I mean every other of those mental possessions. Such as having to be right. Having to be smart. Having to be a winner. And sometimes I always say, it's much wiser to be a loser than a winner. Because if you win, you have to play another game next week. If you're a loser, you can go home and relax. Because I don't know, I've got a lot of friends out there who are avidly watching the soccer, the World Cup, including, you know, my friend, the to care is more important than to cure. And it's probably still out there, I don't know, in Russia somewhere. But anyway, have you ever noticed in the soccer, how many teams play in those tournaments? How many teams go home happy? Only one. If there's about 64 teams, 63 teams, they get very upset. They didn't make it. And worst of all, the team that gets into the final, and they lose in the final. They get so close and they lost. They suffer more than anyone. And the one who actually wins, they win the final, what happens next? They got this big weight of expectation to win next year. So if you're a loser, you know, you just go there, pray and enjoy. They don't expect you to win. So you just have a nice time, enjoy yourself and have a nice game and go home losing. And no pressure on you. It's wonderful being a loser. But we exert our will to try even harder. And that's a lot of suffering. Anyway, the stilling and disappearance of the will, the relinquishing of everything that's ever been acquired, the destruction of wanting, everything fading away, cessation, nirvana. But there are beings with little dust in their eyes, though they are wasting through not hearing this Dhamma. There will be those who will understand this Dhamma, which is why the Buddha taught it, which is why I'm in here teaching. Maybe someone might understand this. Who knows? Do you understand it? No. At least you're being honest. So anyway, that's just sort of an introduction, Four Noble Truths. One of the things it says is because of not understanding these Four Noble Truths, that people aren't enlightened. Do you understand the Four Noble Truths? Then you must be enlightened, Andy. Okay. In other words, we understand, we can recite them. You can probably recite them in Bahasa, you know, probably know by heart in Bahasa, but that's not really understanding them. You get the sort of the picture, the signpost, but do you really get right into it and understand it, what this is talking about? Wanting and will being culprits. Can see how wanting and will go together? So there, this is the teaching of the Buddha, and it's powerful. So, and by calling it wanting instead of craving, oh, we're not craving for something, I just want a cup of tea because I'm thirsty, but I don't crave for it. Yeah, you know, I want my football team to win, but if they don't. But it's not just craving, even small amounts of wanting can actually make you very upset. So, any comments or questions about that? You can actually put your hand up now and ask a question, or this evening in the question time, you can just remember and ask a question this evening. So, the noble... Yeah, got a question, yeah.
You mentioned about Sankara. Would you mind to explain a little bit more? You mentioned about the...
Yeah.
...cause and condition from others.
That's right. This is causes and conditions. They keep rolling on. In other words, just like science, just like the law of gravity, do you decide to fall? No, that's just the nature of life. You know, to heavy objects attract one another. It's not your fault. I often said, I'm not sure if I said this yesterday, oh, it was a couple of days ago to the monks. You know, oh, was it to you? No, it was some talk. It was, why do I tell bad jokes? And the reason is because of, it's not my fault, it's not my will, it's my conditioning. Yeah. And the reason is because my father told bad jokes. And I get it from him, it's in my genes, I can't help it. What about what you do? A lot of times it's just causes and conditions. It's just brainwashing. It is just advertising. It is just conditioning. This is actually where we get a lot of our activities from, and we think it's from us. One, all right, here we go into the will and conditioning. One of the experiences I had when I was a student, which I will never ever forget, was the hypnotism experiment. And that was where, you know, we had, you know, one of the places I was a member of, not just the Buddhist Society, but the Psychic Research Society. Anything weird, like ghosts and hauntings, we'd be there just trying to find out if it was a real handu or whether it was a real Kuai Lo. It was not really Kuai. But anyway, because I was interested in that. But also we had, like, every year just a hypnotist come and do some demonstration for us. And being students, we were willing to just, you know, have a go and see what would happen. I was not a good hypnotic subject. But of course, you know, there's always one student who is just so easy to hypnotize. And they make him do silly things. It's very funny. But the experiment they did, which I would never forget, was the hypnotist suggested to him that when the hypnotist would touch his right earlobe, when he touched his right earlobe, this student, didn't matter where he was or what was going on, he would stand up and in a loud voice he would sing the British national anthem from beginning to end, God Save the Queen. And I thought, no one in their right mind would do that. But then, you know, he gave him that hypnotic suggestion and then took him out of hypnosis. And we were all waiting, at least I was anyway, waiting for him to touch his earlobe. And eventually he did touch his earlobe. And then this student stood up in like a hall of maybe 100 students, 100 young men, and started singing the British national anthem in a loud voice, God Save. And we were shouting at him, we were screaming. We almost wet our pants with laughter. You know, it was so hilarious. But it didn't stop this guy. We were jeering at him, shouting at him, and he carried on to the very end. It was very funny at first, but that's when the hypnotist said, asked us all to calm down, and asked this young man, why did you do that? For everybody in the room, it was the most ridiculous thing to do. And we all know that, you know, it was hypnotized. He was told to do that hypnotic suggestion by the hypnotist. But for him, he made up this reason why he did that. And it was obvious to all of us that he could not tell the difference between what he was told to do under hypnosis and an act of free will. He couldn't distinguish. To him, even though it was the most stupid thing in the world, he found a reason for doing it. And to him, it was a free choice. That's how it appeared. And of course, like you, that made me start to wonder how many other things which I do are a free choice and how much are just being conditioned into me. And what we're saying here is much more is conditioned into you than you'd ever expect. You're subject to conditioning. Our cultures, our upbringing, our media, TV, politicians. It's amazing just how they can brainwash. They do it all the time. And I do that as well. I'm brainwashing you. I'm telling you this from the very beginning. Brainwashing you to be wiser, happier, peaceful people. So it's good brainwashing. I have nothing in it for me. So I just get more work, that's all. So this is actually the will and understanding what it is. It's one of the important parts of the five components of existence, of the cause and effect, dependent origination, sankhara. And for those of you who want to know it a little bit deeper, it's always described in two ways. It's either the sankhara which makes things happen, you know, the process, you know, of willing, and the effect of the will. You know, the cause and the effect. So we have the willed stuff, like, you know, your body being here, and coming from the process of will. That's one of the reasons why, in meditation, to get some letting go, renouncing the will, calming it down, slowing down your thoughts. If the will is like, this is just a simile, if the will is like the acts of parliament which govern the population, the will is like the acts in your mind which govern your actions of body, speech and mind. You govern your actions in thoughts and ideas and concepts. And when we calm our will down, first of all, we find there's not much thought going on. We don't need to discuss things if we've got nothing to do. By discussing, by thinking about things. So you get silence. You don't get silence through exerting and strengthening your will. If you want to have examples of people who've got very strong wills, just go and watch Mr. Donald Trump. Or anyone else who's developed such a strong will. They bulldoze through truth, through life, because they are right. Their will, their ego is incredibly sort of strong. So that's strong will, where it gets you. Eventually you get frustrated. But the opposite of that is just calming the will down. Letting go. Going with the flow. Not looking at the future where your will finds a place to aim for, where you want to be. Where do you want to be at the end of this retreat? I will tell you where you're going to be at the end of this retreat, the same place as you are now. So stop trying to get anywhere. Just be here. Try a different way of just not letting, not willing and planning. Drives you crazy. Yeah, you've got to do that when you go home. But while you're here, just let be. See what happens. You're being in the world rather than making it happen. So anyway, that's a taste of what the will is. And after a while, when it gets calm and peaceful, free at last. See what happens. Anyway, so the noble truth of suffering. And what is the noble truth of suffering? Rebirth is suffering. I just even stopped there. My goodness, that's true. Have you finished with school? If you get reborn, all over again, more homework. More getting into trouble with your parents for not doing good enough at school. More detentions. More going to the principal's office. More, what about having to go through dating again? Ooh. What else do you have to go through? All this other stuff we have to go through again and again. Oh, let's even go earlier than that. Nappies. To wear a nappy all over again. And any time you want to say something, your mum puts this thing in your mouth and you can't say anything. So there was, to make it very clear, there was, weird, but apparently it happened, some of the unbelievable things which I've collected over this, my lifetime so far, and apparently it's true, vindicated. There was a natal ward, a birth ward. What do they call it when you get born? Maternity ward over in the United States. And a baby came out of the womb. And this was, people saw this, they heard it, they weren't imagining it. As soon as it came out of the womb, this boy looked around and spoke. Clearly, and everyone heard this, they were dumbfounded, but the words it spoke were just so memorable. What it said as it looked around was, "Oh no, not again." Oh, I'm blown it, reborn again. Oh, not again. Oh, crikey. So those of you who think you've retired, think again. You're going to have to go through all over again. But the reason is people want to do it all over again. You know why? Because, I did do it well last time. Maybe I chose the wrong guy, or the wrong girl, maybe the wrong professor. But next time, now, I know what I'm going to do. You know what happens? Same mistakes. Same suffering. Anyway, so rebirth is suffering. Aging is suffering. We all know that. Many of us are getting on in life. Death is suffering. Sorrow, lamentation, pain, unhappiness and distress are suffering. Experience what is unpleasant is suffering. on this retreat, despite anything which I can do or anyone can do, you'll experience some unpleasantness. Of course you do. It's part of having a body. You have an itch. Or you're just about to get enlightened, just about, and you blow your nose. Oh. There's always things, it's just, even the food. It's almost nice. It's a problem with having a good chef. The better the chef, the more you expect, and the more suffering there is. It's almost, it's just like the food, I would just like, can't you just put a little bit more in? But no. Or you just see, there's your favourite dish there, and they've got, and it's just, and then you line up there, and then the person in front of you takes the whole lot, you've got nothing left. Whatever it is, it's suffering. Experience what is unpleasant is suffering, and missing what is pleasing is suffering. Just, I really shouldn't do this, but I can't avoid it. It's 3 o'clock, 3:30 in the afternoon, and you're not going to have anything to eat this afternoon or this evening or tonight. But can you imagine your favourite food, which you could have been eaten if you hadn't have come here? Your favourite noodles or your curry. Nasi goreng, yeah. Okay. Can you imagine it from the favourite sort of vendor, the hawker stall? Can you smell it now? Can you smell it? You're not going to get it. Ooh, suffering. Nasi goreng is chicken rice. But anyway, that's what suffering is. I shouldn't do that to you. So it's not being able to get what you want. In short, the five components of existence, what makes existence happen, that's called the truth of suffering. In brief, we go over it in more detail in a moment. And what is rebirth? Now, I put this down here, this is from the suttas, because sometimes people have the idea that, oh, rebirth is just some metaphysical rebirth in the moment. No, it means like reborn into different types of beings. What is rebirth? In whatever type of beings or whatever species of beings, there is rebirth coming to be, coming forth, the appearance of the candors, the components of existence, the acquisition of the senses, that is called rebirth. Now, what is aging? In whatever type of beings or whatever species of beings, there is aging, decrepitude, broken teeth, grey hair, wrinkled skin, shrinking with age, decay of the senses, that is called aging. So I look at all the people here. Yeah, there's a few wrinkled skins here. If it wasn't for the dentist, we'd have broken teeth. If it wasn't for hair dye, we'd have sort of grey hair. So this is called sort of beings aging. And because monks, they shave their hair, bald head, they don't need to have... They asked me, it's a real question. When I went to Thailand recently for the executive retreat in Bangkok, you know what the guy at the customs in Perth asked me? Before you put your bags through the x-ray, he said, have you got, any hair gel in your bag, sir? He knew me, it was only a joke, but I thought it was very funny. Asking a monk if he got any hair gel inside. Anyway, so... But you don't need hair gel. And this was also true in the previous trip to Bangkok. I gave a little half an hour presentation on the stopping aging and how to look young. Yeah, it's true, because, just using the power of your mind. But it was not just the power of the mind, because, honestly, I am 67 this year. And, people ask me, they said, 67? They can't be 67. You look much younger than that. What's the secret to looking so young? And I said, not getting married. You wouldn't be laughing if there's some truth in that somewhere. Anyway. So anyway, well, let's get back to the serious stuff. So experience what is unpleasant is suffering, missing what is pleasing is suffering, not getting what one wants. So what is rebirth? In whatever type of beings, whatever species of beings, what is aging? In whatever type of beings, whatever species of beings, there's aging, decrepitude, broken teeth, grey hair, wrinkled skin, shrinking with age, decay of the senses, that is called aging. What is death? In whatever type of beings, whatever species of beings, there is passing away, demise, a disappearance, a death, a dying, decease, destruction of the candors, a discarding of the body, that is called death. What is sorrow? By whatever kind of misfortune anyone is affected by something of painful nature, sorrow, mourning, anguish, grief, unhappiness, that is called sorrow. Lamentation. I know this looks like a dictionary, but one of the reasons I kept it in here, because what the Buddha was trying to do to make it so precise that people wouldn't be able to interpret these words, important ideas, in any way except their usual meaning. What is pain? Whatever painful feeling results from bodily contact, that is called pain. What is unhappiness? Whatever mental painful feeling arises from the mind, that is called unhappiness. What is distress? Whenever by any kind of misfortune anguish arises from something of painful or unpleasant nature, that is called distress. What is experiencing? What is unpleasant? Whoever has unwanted, disliked, unpleasant sights, sounds, smells, tastes, touch, or mind objects, whoever meets with those who wish you harm, cause you discomfort or insecurity, that is called experiencing what is unpleasant. And what is missing, what is pleasing, whoever has pleasant sights, sounds, smells, tastes, tangibles or mind objects, as the objects of the six senses, or whoever encounters well wishes those who provide you with comfort or security, such as family or friends, and then is deprived of such interactions or connection, that is called missing what is pleasing. And what is not getting what one wants in being subject to birth? This is an example. Desire arises, oh, that we were not subject to birth, we might not never be reborn. But this cannot be gained by desire. This is an example of not getting what one wants. Just wanting it doesn't make it happen. Or in being subject to aging, to disease, to death, sorrow, lamentation, pain, negativity, and distress, they might want, oh, that we were not subject to aging, to disease, to death, to sorrow, lamentation, pain, negativity, distress. Though we might not come to these things, but this cannot be gained by wanting. That is another example of not getting what one wants. So, how can you solve that problem in brief? Of suffering. Not getting what you want is suffering, getting what you don't want is suffering. Isn't the answer pretty clear? Not wanting anything. If you have more contentment and less wanting, that means you're hardly ever separated from what you want because you don't want anything. You're either ever just with what you don't want because anything's okay. Or as this one person once told me, to put it in a visual perspective. She came up and told me, this is my problem. This is where I am in my life, in my career, in my meditation, everything. This is where the level I'm at. This is where I know I should be. And it's so hard, sort of moving where I am to where I know I should be, to meet my goals, achieve my potential, to do what I know I can do. And it's so much suffering. Help me, Ajahn Brahm. It's so easy. This is where you are. This is where you want to be. Instead of trying to move where you want to be, you know, where you are rather, how about moving where you want to be? Just lower your expectations until you are where you are. Where you want to be is where you are. No suffering anymore. What's the problem? So remember, if this is where you are and you want to be somewhere else, anywhere else, that's called suffering. The tension, where you are now and where you feel you have to be, pulling you. Imagine where you are now is where you want to be. Imagine that. Get your head around, just visualize it. There's no other place in the whole world you'd rather be than just here. That's called freedom from wanting. You don't need very much. Letting go. Anyway, any questions about that? Yes. No, no. Fellow over there. Sorry, I wasn't reading your mind. Very good.
Are we talking about suffering for oneself or
suffering? What's the difference?
The crowd around us. Because I can understand the number of sufferings what we've discussed. How can a death can be a suffering for oneself?
How can death, the process of death, is not pleasant? And you go to any palliative care ward, it's, you know, a lot of times you alleviate that suffering, you can actually lessen it. But it's not a pleasant place to be. So, you know, the process of dying is suffering. When you do die, that's a wonderful release. Yeah, but then you get reborn again. More of the same. So it'd be great to be able to understand that and just not get reborn. Why does one get reborn? Because one wants to. One hasn't finished yet. One thinks always the next time. Give yourself another chance. And then maybe next time you do it right. Yeah. Yeah.
Lowering expectations.
Yeah.
Some expectations are not very worthy, such as being the ruler of the universe.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
Some worthwhile expectations or hopes, such as becoming a better and a more compassionate human being.
Does
what you say undercut that, or how do the two fit together?
People try so hard to be a better human being. And they end up becoming pains in the neck. Because they have no idea what a better human being is. Similarly, which I'll probably say later on, I'll repeat it, because it's one of my favorite similes and it answers your question. Have a look for the trees in the forest. I think you've heard me say this before. The trees in the forest, are they trying to be a better tree? Or why don't we make the trees better trees in the forest? Look, they're leaning all over the place. Why don't we straighten them up? You know, like you have dentists straighten up your teeth, make them all look nice. Why can't we straighten up the trees in the forest and make them all nice and straight instead of leaning this way and leaning that way? You know, they're just hopeless, these trees, bent and twisted. And just, why can't and all these green leaves going brown and getting eaten by the bugs? So, what do you mean about getting people to be better? What underlies that, an assumption, which is quite pernicious and causes a lot of suffering, is someone told you, and you've believed it, that you're not good enough. That you could be doing better. You could be richer. You could be wiser. You could be doing more. That your little twisted tree should straighten itself up. And for many people, that causes so many problems in their life. Depression is one of them. So instead of trying to be someone you're not, this is where I know I should be, but I'm down here. It's wonderful to make peace with where you are. And to realize, like all those trees in the forest, there is not one perfect tree in this forest. In the sense of being dead straight, all the branches in the correct place, all the leaves green, they are all twisted and bent by the storms of life, which is why they belong. Not trying to cure the trees, not trying to cure yourself and make yourself a better person, but to care for yourself, to care for the trees, to care for your husband, not try and cure him, Care for yourself. Care for your sickness instead of trying to cure it. The distance between where you are and where you want to be. If there's one thing, you get to where you think you want to be and then you raise it again. It's a staircase which has no ending to it, no top to it. It goes up and up and up, endlessly, achieving more. So instead of doing that, especially here, just try another path. Don't be caring for yourself. Not self-improvement, because you don't have to improve. You're good enough. In our modern world, that is one of the worst sicknesses. Always believing someone told you, I don't know who it was, that you're not good enough. And if you look at everybody else, they're just the same as you. The whole few billion people on planet Earth, not good enough. Who is good enough? So what's the standards? Yeah, there are. Every now and again, because, you know, Buddhism meditation is getting quite popular, every now and again we get supermodels on retreats. Do you know there's a supermodel on this retreat? You take so many photos of me. No, I mean real supermodels. There was this one time, this is Kate Moss. Know Kate Moss? She's a supermodel. And so she wasn't on one of my retreats, but one of my friends went on a retreat, and Kate Moss was on the retreat. It was over in England somewhere. And Kate Moss, a supermodel, on retreat. And of course, you know, guys being guys, they were looking, which one is she? And the interesting part was that this guy couldn't find her. She was sitting there, but didn't know who it was. Because the whole idea of, you know, supermodels, in real life, they just look like everybody else. But they have this wonderful, they call it like a blank sheet of a face, with the lighting and the makeup and the hair. That is what makes them a supermodel. But in real life, they go through the streets and no one recognizes who they are. It's interesting. So many people, they aspire, you know, to be like a supermodel or a super guy. And people like that don't exist. It's just total fantasy and dreams. So, why are you trying to improve yourself? And so what about improving the world? Oh, yeah. A lot of people try and improve the world and they make it much worse. I remember even in Northeast, no, I'm just not doing the word of the Buddha, this is the word of Ajahn Brahm, sorry. There are many people in Northeast Thailand when I went there, they were just, you know, reasonably happy, nice lives. Yeah, they didn't have much, didn't have a TV, no electricity. Well, some of the times when memories I have there, every evening they would sit together and they just talk. Now, old stories, they knew the endings, but, you know, Grandad, please tell it again. Every evening they spent time together. And they didn't really worry about money. They didn't need any money. You know, they got the fish from the rivers, the rice from the fields. They had family, or sometimes they got sick. They had lots of herbal medicines. And they had this wonderful, peaceful life. And one of these other times, I've never heard kids screaming and playing and enjoying themselves so much. This one time I was walking through the forest, you know, and just came to like a clearing. It was next to a monastery. I just went for a bit of exploration. And these little kids were messing around and throwing water over each other and screaming and playing. And I never had that for my friends when I was a young kid. So much joy and happiness. And playing around. And then we came in and developed it. What do we do? Did we really understand? You know, we thought we were doing a good thing, but did we really? I don't know how many of you are growing up, not just sleeping together in one room with your brothers and sisters. Some people even slept in the same bed, your brothers and sisters, in a half a dozen people in a small bed. You learn how to get on together. You learn a lot of social skills. And now, even having a beautiful room by yourself here, it's not good enough because the person next door snores and I can hear it through the room. Anyway, that sometimes just learning how to let go a little bit more and be lower expectations. You'd be much happier. So don't believe all this other stuff. It's, oh, you should get more. You need more. You deserve more. Go for it. Improve your personal best on this retreat. Don't do that. Go for your personal worst. Your PW. If you go for your personal worst, you don't expect much of yourself. Everything is a bonus. So that's why we're so changing attitudes here. Letting go of craving and wanting. Okay. Sorry, I should... Oops, I lost it. So we're just a little bit more. There's no way we ever finish this. But anyway, it doesn't matter. Five components of existence, the khandhas. So you may have heard this in Buddhist teaching. The five khandhas, usually the body, feeling, perception, mental formations and consciousness. So tweak that something. As you see, the body, yeah. And instead of feeling, because feeling is... That doesn't capture the meaning as good, as accurately as experience. Experience through the six senses. It's not the quality of the experience. Yeah, there's three types of experiences according to the way it's usually presented. You know, the pleasure, pain, or somewhere in between. But it's those are just different ways like human beings. You know, the different races of human beings, the different ages, the different sexual orientations. But it's just human beings, humanity. So, you know, that's instead of saying, you know, defining by a particular species, the same as this thing called feeling, it's experience. That's what the Vedana really means. Perception, I already mentioned the sankhara, the will. And other formations which have come from their willing. And lastly, you may notice their consciousness in the plural. Consciousnesses. Not just one consciousness, but many consciousnesses. Because there are six types of consciousness. When one is there, the other five are absent. Totally different. There is seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, touching, and knowing. Why do they have something in common? The reason is, if you can observe closely, you will find whenever you see something, then you know you saw it. The mind takes up the object of seeing, and it becomes now a mind object. If you hear something, you hear it first and then you know you hear. It becomes another mind object. And even knowing, you know that experience and then a moment later you know that you knew. As soon as you add chronology, time, into the process of the six senses, then it becomes a process of separate moments of consciousness. But the mind sense, the sixth sense, always gets involved. So So if you see, you know you saw. If you hear, you knew you heard. If you smell, taste, feel your body, you know you've felt something with the body. Which means that all of the usual five senses, seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, touching, is followed by knowing, which gives it the same type of flavor. It's like you add chili into everything which you eat. You add chili into your cornflakes, chili on your toast, chili on your dumplings, chili on your noodles. Whatever you eat, you put chili, because it always has something the same. That's like consciousness, mind consciousness, knowing. Always added, so it always tastes the same. There was, I remember this Thai lady, she was running a fish and chip shop over in Hillary's, and she had so many Thai people coming there on holiday. Under the fish and chip shop counter, she had a big jar of chili sauce. Which means so many customers, they came there, became a famous restaurant. The only place in Australia you can get fish and chips with chili sauce. As hot as you wanted. But this is like consciousness. It always comes in and gives everything the idea of being similar. Like there are six totally different types of consciousness. That's why I'm calling it consciousnesses. Plural. And that changes the whole way we look at the stream of consciousness. Listening to me now. And then knowing what you just heard. And I think that is enough for today. Otherwise, you find that one of my favorite words, which you'll come up with many times, is called discombobulate. Discombobulate is an English word, which you don't need to know what it really means. It's just what it sounds like. It means totally beyond comprehension, confusing. Not I'm really be able to understand it. You've been discombobulated. Well, the other one is to bamboozle. You know what bamboozle means? It gets same thing. You know, you bamboozle. You know what's up, what's down. So being bamboozled. I don't want to bamboozle you too much or to leave you too discombobulated. Instead, just what you've got so far is good enough. So, there we go. Any complaints? You can put the questions in the box. And any complaints, we'll send to the management. And you guys tell them it. No, it's hopefully you can actually even ask some questions on that this evening if you need to or other things. But that's just a little bit to get started on the word of the Buddha, the first noble truth. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Very good. Okay. If you want to borrow the little stick there, and then you can put it on your devices, whatever, or get it from the machine over there. And then, so when you're translating it to the people who didn't understand the English, then you can actually get it from there. It makes it easier than having to write it all down. And it's there for tomorrow and the next day as well. Okay, so now is the time for more meditation, or a cup of tea, or a rest, or I don't know what we're going to do. So I think it's usually the tea time is 5, isn't it? Okay, but you've got time for the Indonesian group to be able to translate.
Very good.
Excellent. Oh, we missed out something, didn't we? What did we miss out? Sadhu. Sadhu. Sadhu.
Okay.
Yeah, we missed that one up.
Okay.
Okay. So again, carry on with meditation or walking meditation, whichever you feel is appropriate for you.